For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
We continue to go win five, lose five, roughly, for the Gardos to talk about everything with this team. We'll also get a peek around baseball at large with our next guest, Anthony Castrovince of MLB.com, joins us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. And way to line this up perfectly with the end of the ballgame. That worked out well.
I will take all the credit and none of the blame. That is the way we run things around here.
I like it. That's the way to be.
So I guess we'll start maybe at the beginning here. What's going on with the offense now?
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's just been such a moving target of late, you know. The bullpen can be an issue for a stretch. The offense can be an issue for a stretch. The starting pitching has really been an issue, you know, for the better part of the year. But, yeah, it's just the runs aren't there. But I would have to imagine that if you are a member of the Cleveland Guardians lineup, you're probably putting some pressure on yourself with the way things have kind of unfolded here, the continuing struggle to get just to string together deep quality starts from the rotation. I really think it all starts there. There's been a lot of pressure placed on the bats all season.
Sorry to jam you up there. So to you, yeah. Is the rotation still a bigger concern than the offense?
It is, just because we've seen in the larger sample, we've seen, you know, that the offense can do enough, you know, can do enough to be one of the better teams in MLB in this particular season. It's just that, you know, it's hard to be fully optimistic about the state of the rotation given the inability to get length. You know, I think that just affects everything. It affects the bullpen. They've had to rely on, you know, their top three or four arms of the bullpen at an enormous rate. I mean, when you look around compared to the rest of the league, I think they have as many rookies with 50 plus appearances as the rest of the league combined. You know, that catches up to you over the course of the season. So if you can't get, you know, it'd be such a difference maker if they could routinely get six innings from their starters. But there's a lot of teams feeling that, you know, there's a lot of teams that have dealt with injuries this season. It's been a difficult year across the sport in terms of starting pitching, but there's no question. I mean, that's been the biggest Achilles heel for this team.
So you mentioned the offense maybe straining a little bit, you know, pressing a little bit. And I'm not trying to call one of my favorite players out specifically, but I'm going to do it anyways. Is Josh Naylor aware of the concept of overswinging and that you don't have to try and hit a ball to Mars on every single pitch?
That's just who Josh is, you know, and that's why he can be kind of on the streakier side. And we've seen him go into some prolonged funks, and you could say he's in one right now, that's for sure. But I mean, that's just the profile, you know. I don't think it's changing when you're 27 years old at this stage. I don't think he's gonna, you know, morph his approach overnight. But yeah, it's just that's what you take with him. You know, you take the good with the bad when it comes to Josh Naylor. He's obviously had an all-star season. You know, he's got career high in home runs and whatnot, but, you know, he is going to go into some funks with that swing profile.
Anthony Castrovince, MLB.com on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Where are we at with Lane Thomas, and are we officially flirting with the lemon law with Lane that maybe, just maybe, this thing isn't going to work out this year?
Oh, man, I hate to go there, you know, 3 weeks into his tenure or whatever it is, but obviously, you know, that has not worked out particularly well. I didn't mind that deal. I thought that's a good solid plug-in player, more of a platoon type, but still a guy who can give you some contact and speed, and you've got him for another year. So the trade was sensible, but just not. That's the nature of the beast when you talk about the trade deadline, particularly on the position player side, is it's so volatile. Like you don't really know what you can get from a guy in the last 2 months of the season. Sometimes they, you know, you catch them at the right time, they go bananas, and then this would be obviously the extreme side, the other way, where he's something like he's got like 3-4 hits since the trade, which is crazy. So, I don't know I haven't watched him enough to know if, you know, like we were talking about Josh Naylor, where Josh Naylor is going to chase. He's going to go through several week stretches where it feels like he's forgotten how to hit completely. I don't think Lane Thomas, has that profile, but, that's what they've gotten here so far.
Anthony, we've kind of been hinting at the streakiness of this team. You know, you win 6 games, you win 5 games, then you go and lose 5 of 6. How far away do you think the Guardians are from catching a rhythm and at least stabilizing some of that up and down, peaks and valleys kind of thing that we've been going through the last probably 6 weeks or so?
Man, I find them impossible to predict because there's been several. It's weird because they've been hovering either at or right near the best record in baseball, or at least the best record in the American League for weeks now. And yet, it's never felt like it, right? Because when you watch them every day, you see the erratic nature of their schedule of late, where you're digging yourself after the series against the Cubs last week. Then you go into Milwaukee and get spanked by them. Then you have this wild win over the Yankees and feeling good again. And then, Aaron Judge and Juan Soto do their thing for a couple of days. So it's just, it has been a very erratic second half, I would say, in particular. Obviously you tell yourself going into the year that they'd be, a couple games up in the Central and flirting with the best record in the league. Yeah, you feel great. But again, it just doesn't feel that way with the way they've played for a pretty prolonged period now for the second half for sure. And again, to me, so much of that just comes down to riding the wave with the starting pitching and hoping for things that might be difficult to get, hoping for those routinely 6 innings from the guys they acquired and Cobb's already on the IL, of course. So they just have to keep piecing it together and you have to ride the wave of confidence when it comes. That's all I can tell you. It's kind of just that is the nature of MLB this season, where there's no elite teams. There's just not. There's some really good teams. I wouldn't say there's any like great teams with the way people have played. I think everybody has been susceptible to injuries and prolonged slumps. And it's really been a fascinating year in that respect where, we're not going to have a 100-game winner. We're just going to have a lot of teams bunched together, and it'll really, we say this every year, but this will especially be a year where who is hot in October? Who pieces it together in October?
So I can't remember the exact amount of pitches Gavin was in the 5th inning when he got pulled for Sandlin. But I understand the catch-22 of this. You're trying to win the game, so you're putting your high-leverage guy or one of your 4 high-leverage guys in there. Especially considering Gavin's stuff, especially considering that early in the game I thought he was really, really good. Is there also maybe a call that to maybe give Gavin that chance to extend into the 5th and 6th innings? Could that be another thing that's a part of this? So basically I'm asking, is maybe this a spot where Stephen Vogt as a young manager needs to lean into his best starting pitchers just a little bit more?
Oh, I mean, I think so. For me, that's kind of an underlying theme to the season where, Vogt, in some ways to his credit, in some ways to his detriment, has managed every week as if it's, the last week of September. He's been aggressive with the hooks. Now, it's easy for me to say that without knowing, everything baked in there where, Gavin Williams, he was at almost 100 pitches, which, of course, we know is like the boogeyman in MLB. But, there's also just – it's a guy – it's a hard 100 pitches, right? It's 100 pitches in the 5th inning. And it's a guy who obviously, dealt with elbow trouble earlier in the year. His usage has been interesting this year where he's incorporating that cutter, but he's not using the slider as much. Like, I don't know what's going on in there, quite frankly. I don't know if any of us know. Is he fully 100% or what? I don't know. I know his stuff still ticks up, so that's good. But again, there's between 100 pitches in the seventh and 100 pitches in the fifth, I think. I mean, that's some hard work. So that's a long-winded way of saying, like, I think in this particular instance, I could probably defend it. But I do think you have a point where, you know, there have been a lot of times this season where, you know, maybe you got to trust a young starter to go through it. And that'll, you know, you'll come out better in the long run, even if it doesn't necessarily help you that game. Because again, you can only go to the well so many times with your bullpen, and they've been doing that all year.
So you mentioned Stephen Vogt being very aggressive in how he manages, and I, for one, actually do love it. I know I might have just made a small criticism there, but it takes me back to the managers I remember when I was little, who they felt it was their job to manage games. It feels like now the contemporary managers feel like maybe their job is more to stay out of the way. It felt like that way with Tito too, even though he was an older guy. Do you think that maybe Stephen Vogt is the archetype, that this is who he is, or is he managing that way because of this team? Like, do you think that this is just who he is as a manager, though?
That's a great question. It's so hard to know because we've never seen him in this role before. You do have to play the hand you're dealt. They've been dealt a difficult hand from the beginning of the season when it comes to the rotation. Lo and behold, it turned out, you know, the bullpen had a lot more strength than, you know, than what a lot of us thought going into the season. So I'd be inclined to guess that, you know, it's just managing your personnel. But that said, I mean, this guy was a player not very long ago at all, and he's seen the way the wind is blowing. He's seen the way the game has evolved. He's seen it from, you know, a prominent position on the field. And so it would not surprise me if he is a little more, you know, if that is his mindset in general, where, hey, I'm gonna get what I can get a couple times through the order with my starter, and then I'm gonna go to the bullpen. But again, I think what you'll learn as he does that job, you know, for a longer period of time, is how to balance managing for today and managing for a 162 game season, because it's a really difficult balance. I mean, unfortunately you can't manage every game like it's October, because, you know, in the long run it will catch up to you.
Kansas City, Minnesota, they're both two games back off now with the Guardians' loss today. Who scares you more?
You know, I'm going to go Kansas City. Obviously, the Twins have been banged up this year. You know, they got some bullpen issues. I feel like Kansas City really did a good job at the trade deadline. Pretty much everything they've done at midseason worked for them. You know, they got Bobby Witt. They got a really strong starting staff that you can – you know, that again can give you quality innings and hand us the bullpen. So, they got something special where they weren't really supposed to be here. You know, they lost 106 games last year, and yes, they made some offseason expenditures, but you can never expect to go from 106 losses to playoff contention, even in a year like this. So, I'd probably lean towards them.
Rank the division leaders currently in the AL in terms of championship potential.
Oh man, it's tough for me because, like I said, who's healthy at the end of at the finish line? You know, you look at the American League, and you know, I'm not too overwhelmed by the Yankees. I know that's hard to say given what we just saw from Aaron Judge the last few days, but I do feel like they're going to be pitchable in the postseason. But the Orioles are so banged up in the rotation. So at the end of the day, it's like you just kind of start to lean towards the Astros. You know, they were 10 games back on June 18th. Now they're 5 games up. They've obviously got that playoff medal. You just got Justin Verlander back. Rotation has made a huge turnaround, huge U-turn from the start of the season where they're really banged up and struggling to piece it together. And now it's a real strength for them. So they're going to be dangerous yet again.
Do you think do you think that the strength of the AL Central that we're seeing this year, do you think that will be a repeatable thing going forward, or are having three teams that are this damn good this deep into the season, is that going to be an anomaly to specifically this year?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I've been guilty many times of falling for the banana in the tailpipe when it comes to the American League Central and thinking like, okay, it's not a laughing stock anymore. It's a deep division. This team's on the rise. That team's on the rise, et cetera, et cetera. And then it just doesn't work out. You know, this year's worked out much better. Obviously, you got three teams vying for, you know, legit playoff contention here on August 22nd. That's pretty good. I do think the Tigers, you know, have some really nice building blocks. The White Sox are an absolute dumpster fire, of course. So they're not, you know, going to be relevant anytime soon. But Yeah, I do. I mean, I think they're all well-run organizations, kind of different. The Royals operate kind of differently than the Guardians and Twins, although, you know, they've kind of embraced pitching philosophies of the Guardians to the point of, you know, hiring people away from the Guardians. So in the long run, that'll probably serve them well. And, you know, to make the kind of turnaround they've made speaks well to their ability to put things together. And so, you know, I don't put it past these teams. It's a different environment than it was 5 years ago or whatever, when you could just beat up, you know, on some bad teams in the AL Central, and you're playing them 19 times a piece or 18 times a piece, and that would artificially inflate the record of whoever happened to win the AL Central in a given year. You know, those days are gone with the balanced schedule, but I do think the quality of the teams is stronger now.
Anthony, did you watch Breaking Bad, or have you watched Breaking Bad?
Of course. Yeah, I mean, maybe the best show ever.
It was the, I don't know if you know this, yesterday was the 13th anniversary of the episode where Walt says, "I am the danger, I am the one who knocks." I just wanted you to know that. Two, what one show would you want to bring back that has wrapped up to this point?
Oh, man. Boy, that's a great question. Breaking Bad has kind of milked it for all it's worth, I think. You know, they have a prequel and a movie that follows the aftermath. So, and then you have Better Call Saul. So, I don't know. Mad Men, maybe. We'll see Mad Men, see how those guys aged in the 1970s and how they handled the transition to a brave new world in the 1970s. I might like to see that.
My hot take was Mad Men, the sequel, should be set in the 80s, and it should be about Peggy.
Okay, I like that.
But we still get some Don, but he's like older, yeah, Washed out. I definitely got sick of looking at how good John Hamm looked for that. So he would have to really be beat to crap, because I just couldn't take another 6 seasons of that dude looking that good.
Yeah, he's on another level. We had the pleasure of hanging out with John Hamm at a couple All-Star games in the past, back when he was like not quite a big enough celebrity to have graduated from the MLB celebrity softball game, but he has since moved on to greener pastures.
Still too damn good looking, the bastard. Anthony, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Anthony Castrovince, MLB.com on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I like the fact that people are enjoying Cleveland baseball, and I like that people are enjoying it in a different way. And if this is your first pennant run, where there's some drama to it, welcome to Cleveland baseball. Just speaking to members of Cleveland media. No, I mean, I'll be honest with you. Like, I hate losing to the Yankees. I hate losing to the Yankees more than I hate losing to damn near anybody else. It just, I have hated that organization since I was growing up. I don't even have, like, I mean, they haven't been in the East. The Guardians or Cleveland baseball hasn't been in the East since 1994. So I don't even have that. I just have, they basically outspent everybody. They were the organization that really began the lopsided economics in baseball, and I despise them. At the same point, the season isn't over. Like, I can hate this loss today, and I can have a minor criticism of Stephen Vogt, and I can also look at this and go, well, the Twins and Royals are a little close for comfort. But I think the main thing that Castrovince said is right, which as long as you make the playoffs this year, I think you're going to have a chance to make a deep run. I'm a little bit more skeptical about the Royals than I am the Twins, but would it surprise me if either one of those teams made a great run and went on a World Series run? No, because they're hanging in there's not great teams. There's not the best of the best of the best. There's no juggernauts, but there's 8 teams that are tough to beat. 9 teams in each league that are tough to beat, especially in the AL. So that being said, and the 2020 sports you heard in the last segment there, brought to you by Peter and Company Jewelers in Avon Lake, where Cleveland goes to get engaged. But as we have this conversation, I will say I think Stephen Vogt should have left Gavin Williams in the game today in the 5th inning. And I know that some of this is hindsight. I know that by the time he left the game in the 5th inning, having pitched 4 1/3 innings, he had given up 8 base runners. A lot of that damage was early, and he kind of worked his way out of it. But between the first and fifth innings, I can understand if Stephen Vogt had seen enough to say, I'm not going to leave him out there and let him turn this from a 2-0 game into a 5-0 game. The problem is that when the bullpen was firing on all cylinders and you could just put any one of your four high-leverage guys in that situation, 9 times out of 10 it's working. Those averages have gone down a lot here recently. And this is not, I'm not down on the bullpen. I'm not. But we can't keep saying at some point the rotation has to find out how to pitch their way out of things when they're not given the opportunity to. So while I understand in 4 1/3 innings, Gavin Williams gave up 8 base runners. That's when we get to walks and hits per innings pitched. The whip stat, that's a lot. That almost puts you at about 2, right? That would be sensational to have. And when I say sensational, I'm sensationally bad if you had a 2 whip. At the same point, Gavin Williams is a young pitcher who needs to learn to pitch his way out of jams. And even though he was battling in that moment, and even though they had 2 men on and they had the bulk of the lineup still to come because New York is 5 or 6 deep in their lineup, I would rather lose that kind of game, day baseball, getaway game, up against the best lineup. I would rather lose that game with Gavin Williams and the potential negativity of him serving up the 3-run home run, which is what happened with Nick Sandlin gave up to Gio Stanton. I'd rather lose that game in the arm of Gavin Williams in the fifth inning than lose that by over-leveraging Nick Sandlin a little bit more. At some point, we're not going to know if Boyd or Gavin or Tanner or any of these young guys can make headway if the earliest possible convenience you give them the hook. I think you've been getting some decent performances recently. Maybe not the most consistency. I think Gavin is primed to go 5 or 6 innings. So with 98 pitches, he's already, what, 3 hitters into the inning? If you give up that game, I know there will be people who say, well, why didn't you bring in the high leverage guy? And my retort now and then would have been, because at some point you have to see if the young guy can pitch out of that situation. I love the way Stephen Vogt has handled the bullpen, the rotation, the lack of consistency from the lineup to this point. But I think if this rotation is going to stand on its own, which then I think alleviates pressure on the bullpen, and I think once the rotation and bullpen are in lockstep, I think that's going to alleviate pressure on the lineup. But that doesn't happen. It's not like this is just as simple as Matt Boyd, Gavin Williams, Tanner Bibee, Ben Lively, that these guys just start going out there and throwing out 6 shutout innings every single start. You have to bridge the gap there. And today's fifth inning was an opportunity to bridge the gap. And I think this is where Stephen has to tweak his feelings on this the dog days of summer to at least give him at least give the starters a chance to start trying to get that confidence that they can pitch out of those situations.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number 1.
Or trap pick number 1.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
It's worked. It worked up until 6 weeks ago. But it's time. I actually think you've got 4 or 5 guys. I know Cobb's on the IL now, which is why Cantillo started yesterday. At least 4 of these 5 guys, I actually think are worth being in the rotation right now. but you have to give them an opportunity to fail, because the other way of saying that is you're giving them an opportunity to succeed. Spare me the 98 pitches. Gavin Williams has not gone over 100 pitches but once this year. So three or four more pitches, even if it led to a home run, well, okay. Because I'll be honest with you, if he came out after the game and said, I wanted to give him a chance to pitch out of it, many of the times he's been in this situation, I've given him the quick hook. I have full faith in him in that situation. Even if you don't win this game, you don't know the confidence you might build in Gavin Williams. And I do think Gavin and Tanner it's not that they're not confident. It's they don't have the same confidence that they had when they were first up in the big leagues last year. Some of that is Tanner's been on an island for most of the season by himself with Ben Lively, trying to pitch their way out of this immense rotational deficit they've had. Some of it is, I think, Gavin's still working back from the injury and he hasn't had a normal season. Understand all of it. I don't want you trying to build that bridge in September. It's got to be now. Because now is when you start to set up, all right, who's getting that first crack at New York if we see him in the first round of the playoffs? All right, if we have to play in the wild card round, who's going out there first? Who can we trust? How long? You know, this is when you figure that out. And I'm glad that Anthony said what I think to be the truth, which is that for all the concern and the belly aching about the lineup, guys, I think it's all about the rotation. Which, again, I don't think I know they just lost 5 of 6, so I'm not trying to be contrarian. I don't really think they're that far off. I think the rotation is as close as it's been. You are getting, I mean, even Boyd earlier in the Yankee series, that's a tough lineup, and it's not as if the man completely imploded. I thought he acquitted himself okay in his third start coming off Tommy John surgery against a lineup with Aaron Judge, Juan Soto. And I know Gio Soto hasn't been Gio Soto in a while. Or it's Gio Soto. Gio Stanton hasn't been Giancarlo Stanton for a while. The dude can still hit the ball 450 feet with the best of them. So between Lively, Boyd, Tanner, and Gavin, four of those five spots, you should be able to start. The margins for where they are, I just think are actually pretty close to where they need to be. And then once you start to get 5 or 6 solid innings out of those guys, I think there's going to be a natural calming thing that happens to the bullpen because they're not going to be as overworked. And I think you're going to see the lineup. That being said, Josh Naylor, I love watching Josh Naylor play. You don't have to swing out of your shoes every single at bat. You're not getting any closer to helping the lineup if you are an automatic out when you're trying to hit every single pitch to right field by 500 feet. Take about 10% off there, Super Chief. 216-474-0092. And it's not just him, by the way. Like, Kwan might not be the overswinger that Naylor is. Kwan has not had his best at-bats the last 8 weeks. Hosey, I don't think, has had his best at-bats. When your three best hitters are going through that kind of spot at the same point in the season, guys, that has nothing to do with approach. But you have to rein in your approach. I'm fine with swinging for the fences more. But it's to the point where almost every single at-bat, even Kwan, who's your most disciplined hitter, feels like he is swinging out of his shoes trying to get something going instead of just taking what's given to him. Some news out of Seattle as Seahawks head coach Mike McDonald says the starters will play some on Saturday. So we're still waiting to find out if Deshaun Watson will play for the Browns in the preseason finale on Saturday. But at least we know some starters will play for Seattle, and some starters will play for the Cleveland Browns. We just don't know which one. So awaiting with just bated breath the decision by Kevin Stefanski. But on social media, and of course, Twitter reactions on X, powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Dennis saying Lemon Law Lane was perfect. I can't say it, but it was perfect. I feel a little mean girly making fun of Lane Thomas. The man uprooted his entire life at the drop of a hat and went from a team that, let's just say, conservatively is not very good in Washington. That's a 58-win team to a team that, when they acquired him, had one of the three best records in baseball. Actually, might have had the best record in baseball. So it's not his fault. He didn't trade for himself. Let's really just put this on the Cleveland Guardians. You traded for him. You bet the entirety of the deadline and the success of the deadline was built on Lemon Law Lane. And I know, like, Kastrovitz is right. It's been 3 weeks. Let's not go too mean. But every time I watch Lane Thomas, like, you had Nestor Cortez, the softest throwing lefty you possibly can, who has like an ERA in the mid-4s. Just the middest of mid-left-handers you could possibly have. Did we get a three-hit performance out of Lane? Like, that's the... Okay, if he can't feast against a good righty like Gerrit Cole, totally get it. All right? Maybe he's just a platoon player. But, like, I have you in the lineup to feast on Nestor Cortez's average ass, and you can't even do that? You can't even get me, like one extra base hit and then like another, just a little slow dribbler. You can't give me just one home run. Not trying to mean girl, but man, Lemon Law Lane is starting to become the thing, and this happens all the time. Like last year was Darius Garland for the Cavs. Like somebody always becomes the pain point. Michael Martinez was this guy in 2016 for me, where, and now Darius was not this. I want to be very clear. Darius was not this guy for me with the Cavs this year. It was J.B. Bickerstaff that was the guy for me this year. But there's always the face of some of that epitomizes where a team is struggling at or where a team is failing to meet expectations. It's going to be Lemon Law Lane Thomas, man. It's not... Lane, it's not your fault, buddy. I mean, it is. Feast on lame-ass lefties. Like, come on, dude. That's the one thing you're supposed to be good at. The same point. Somebody's got to be that guy. Johnny Peralta was that guy for like half a decade. Let's go with Dennis. Dennis, welcome to the show, buddy.
Hey.
Hey.
So I agree with you about the pitching rotation probably being more important than the lineup. But I am more frustrated with this lineup. I want him to call a couple of guys up and shake it up a little bit because, I mean, they had one hit today. I mean, it was right out of Major League with Bob Uecker. And it frustrates me more. The pitching staff starting pitchers in particular, have had a lot of injuries, and I completely understand that. And that's frustrating too. But these guys haven't largely been injured, and they just – they swing like rusty fences for weeks on end and then get hot. And I think, you know, maybe Manzardo can provide a spark. I don't know, but I think they got to shake it up. Thanks.
Dennis, we appreciate you. I know that for a lot of Guardians fans, Manzardo has become the clarion call. If you're expecting a rookie, no matter how highly rated of a rookie, if you're expecting a rookie to come up and fix your offense, I'm not saying it won't work, but it feels a lot like firing the hitting coach. It feels like doing something to say you're doing something. Jimenez might be the most disappointing player this year simply because I saw him early in the game. I can't remember the exact circumstances, but early in the game, I think John Kensie had walked. And so John Kensie's either the 5 or 6 hitter. Jimenez was the 6 hitter. And he was a string of Jimenez to Bo to Tyler Freeman in just 3 dumbass at-bats in a row. Not bad at-bats, just like what are you doing kind of at-bats. And so Jimenez to me, honestly, it's Jimenez, it's Hosey, it's Kwan, and it's Naylor. This lineup is set that if those 4 guys, or if you want to throw in David Fry, if you want to throw in whoever's your 5 hitter, if the first 4 or 5 guys in the lineup are doing their job, and doing their job the way it's supposed to be done, it does take pressure off the rest of the lineup, and it also takes pressure off the rotation. Kwan has had too many bad at-bats recently. I'm not trying to hammer the guy. It's just I don't think he'd disagree with me. Josh needs to stop swinging out of his shoes on every pitch. You can do that some pitch. You can't do it literally every pitch. You can't hit a 14-run home run, Josh. Somebody needs to let you know that. And even Hosey, I think, has been pressing. And here's the thing, guys. The difference between 2022 and 2023 is not just the health of the rotation. It is the lineup pressing. And so I have a feeling that the rotation can fix itself simply by continuing to stay healthy with the four guys that got healthy right now. But at some point, Kwan, Naylor, and Hosey have to get back to remembering you want to hit home runs, but you can't hit them on every at-bat. Sometimes you just have to take what you're given. That's where, listen, Brian Rocchio, yeah, the guy's got a 600 OPS. Bo Naylor, this year has been a massive regression at the plate. You're not going to get an argument out of me. The strength of this lineup was never going to be 7 through 9. This thing is built on 1 through 5 have to carry 80% of the load, and then anything you get from 6 on back, that's icing on top. That's what this lineup was for the first 77 games of this season. And it can be that again the second Hosey, Kwan, and Naylor sit down and go, we're going to have more patient, more intelligent, less desperate, less pressing at bats. Now, I got to get to this, the blind arrogance of hot people, because this popped up on my Instagram. Livy Dunn. And Livy Dunn's a 21-year-old gymnast, if you haven't heard of her. She is TikTok and Instagram and YouTube famous. And she's dating Paul Skeens. You definitely, I think we proved with the Matthew McConaughey Snoop Dogg thing, I don't know who's more famous. Livy Dunn's probably more famous. But Livy Dunn, Paul Skeens, they're a sports power couple that met at LSU. So Paul Skeens has taken baseball by storm in his rookie year. So I can't remember if it was her crappy content team or some other national crappy content team. They thought it'd be great if Livy Dunn went under disguise, right? She got in disguise, undercover, to try and buy Paul Skeens' rookie card at like a sports trading show. Now, here's where, to me, it's the blind arrogance of hot people. And I don't think Hollywood has helped hot people. Because all she did, all Livy Dunn did, was put on a hat, like a baseball cap, and she put on glasses. And it was sunglasses, in fairness. It's not like Clark Kent situation here. But if I saw a woman that was interested in Paul Skeens' rookie card, and she appeared to be 21, and she looked just like Livy Dunn, except she had sunglasses and a hat on, I'd probably think to myself, hey, I think that's Livy Dunn, which means your undercover disguise is crap. And you know what? Here's the thing. I was thinking about like kind of making fun of this, but then it brought me back to, like, what was it, 6 weeks ago when Superman was filming here, right before they wrapped up. I went to go get some coffee before the show. And so I was walking out by the restaurant across the way over there. And I'd seen pictures of David Corenswet, who plays Superman. And there was a guy that was apparently, like, you can see when somebody's tall, even when they're sitting down. And he had like a crappy baseball cap on. And he kind of, he was like slumped in the chair and like had his head down. And as soon as we made eye contact, I was like, I think that's Superman. And I was almost angry that he didn't put more into his disguise. Like, if, like, Livy Dunn is otherworldly famous, and she's got dudes thirsting on her from ages 8 to 79. So, like, if you're going to go quote-unquote undercover, gonna need a wig, gonna need the Bobby Valentine funny nose, gonna need some sort of scar to throw people off, maybe a birthmark. I just think we've reached a point where if you're going undercover is wearing a bad baseball cap and wearing some level of glasses, it is comedically underwhelming how effective this is. You just like You just look like a really hot, famous person who happens to have glasses and a hat on. I don't think anyone was fit. At some point, you're insulting our intelligence, and this is why we got to talk about the blind arrogance of hot people. Do better, hot people.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.